Huh?
Anyone knows what I'm
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, the Gemara which we're going to learn about today is, it happens to be the next one in the series. This is Beragola, Beravi, number 11, Yud Aleph. And this Gemara will take us to a discussion which will give us a chance to learn a little bit about the Parshas HaShavua. It's always nice. Okay. The Gemara starts actually on the bottom of Daf Dalet Amud Aleph in Maseches Avodah Zarah. And the Gemara says as follows. Rabbi Papa Rami Ksiv Kel Zayim B'chol Yoyim. Hashem gets angry every day. And how much is his anger rega a moment? V'kama rega, what's a moment? Echas mechamesh, riva yishleisha salafim, mishmeinim meiz, v'arba mishmeinim, v'shua, 153,848th of an hour. That's a rega. Nobody can, ein chobei yuchel chavenes a rega. Nobody can define exactly what that time is with the exception of Bilam. Bilam, who was said regarding him that he knew Das Elyon, he knew Hashem's Das. So the Gemara says it's a big surprise, right? He couldn't even figure out what his animal wanted, what his donkey wanted, and you expect him to know what the Rabban Hashem wanted. And the Gemara goes through a whole thing over here, a whole spiel, and says the Gemara, the whole Das Elyon, it's not that he understood the Rabban Hashem, but he was able to exactly specify, hit on the nail, that moment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets angry. And that's what the Navi says in Micha. Remember what Balak ben Sipor had as an idea, and what Bilam, Balak ben Moav, Melech Moav, and what Bilam responded to him. V'mandat Tzidkos Hashem. In order to know the goodness, the charity of Hashem. And the Gemara says, what's the Tzidkos Hashem? Because Hashem said, in all those days that they were trying to get you, I didn't get angry even for that moment. And that way, he wasn't able to do his plan. That's what the Gemara says. Okay. So, because had I gotten angry and he would have tapped into that, it would have been big, big trouble. It would have been big, Ben Clayton's. And that's what Bilam says when he says, How can I curse if Hashem didn't curse? What anger can I show that Hashem didn't show? So, again, how long is Hashem angry? He's angry for a moment. Says the Gemara, that's what we say every day in Mizmor Shir Chanukas, Ki Rega Ba'apoi. A moment is his anger. And the Gemara says, when does this happen? Emas Rasach, when is this anger? Amar Abaye said, B'tlashrei kamaisa, 3 hours into the day, ki chivra karbalta de tarnagula, when the comb of the rooster begins to show white, says the Gemara, 1 second, kol shata v'shata mechaver chivra, it always shows white. Says my kol shata is be suraki sumki, hahi shata less be suraki sumki. Usually it has red streaks, and now at that time it does not have red streaks. What's the idea that what's the idea that it's saying there, that you know normal that's when it has it? So the Gemara will continue for a moment. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, there was a min, usually means a Christian, a heretic, right, who was bothering him with psukim, always, you know, trying to challenge him on all kinds of heretical interpretations. One day he took his rooster and he put it right by the feet of his bed. And he was committed, he was going to watch it the whole time until he saw that moment when the colors changed. And he would know that's the moment of Hashem's anger. And he would zap him. Says the Gemara, Sava kimata ishata altia, kimata ishata nimneim. But what happened was he fell asleep. Right? It's hard staring at the comb of a rooster. trust me, I've tried. So he said, Shmami no lavayach erel mevadachi. Evidently it's not the way to do this kind of thing. As it says, V'rachma val komasav, uchsiv gam onosh l'tzadik loytayv. That it's not good for a tzadik to be the cause of punishment for somebody else. And the Gemara continues and says, Tana mishmei to Rabbi Meir. So you might be wondering about what the significance of this time is. V'shosh ha-malochim enichim kisveim b'rosheim u'mishtachvin l'chama. It's when the kings put on their crowns and they bow down to the sun. They worship the sun. So miyad chayes ha-kodesh baruch hu. That's when Hashem gets angry. That's what this magic time is. That's when that's again when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets upset. Now, the Maral is focused on this Gemara. Specifically, his focus is on this passage, Emas Rosach. When does he get angry? Tanam Shneider Amir, when the sun shines and all the Malchim Mizrach Umarov put their crowns on their heads and so on and so forth and bow down to the sun. That's when Hashem gets angry. So he wants to understand. He wants to understand what this means. He wants to understand what's the nature of this anger. What kind of anger is this? What are we talking about over here? And why is this anger going to be happening specifically at this time? Okay. Now, before we get too far, I'm going to go. You know, sometimes we sort of like work around certain things. When he speaks about the idea of the Suraike Chiura Betarnago, what seems to be, the way it's understood is that it has to do with the way the sun shines and somehow affects the appearance, at least, of the coloration of the rooster's comb. He says that the extent of the of what he says here, which I think is very, 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 very fine and sufficient, is really in the last paragraph in this in this section is about is that a rooster generally is the one which is like a clock, right? A rooster has certain sensitivities to time, to light, and therefore, you know, the rooster was the clock here too, not only to tell what first thing in the morning was, but also to tell what, you know, this kind of a time. So we looked at this in a certain way, and then he says something about why it's called Gever, and Gever is compared to Kas. Whatever that means, we're going to leave that. We're not going to discuss that. We're not going to discuss that together. But that's the idea of the rooster being used as the gauge for this specific thing. But the rooster is not the cause. The rooster is just the indicator. It's just the signal. The cause is b'shar shamalachim, when the kings get up and they bow down to the sun. That's what's going to generate the anger. So what's going on over here? So the Maral begins and he says as follows. Says the term charoinaf, when it speaks about divine fury, it's associated with Havayda Zara. And he brings a whole bunch of examples. The most famous example is what we say in the second paragraph of the Shema. It's at least twice a day. V'charaf Hashem b'chem v'tzaras Hashemayim. That is, when we go, v'avaritem elohim acherim. If you worship other gods, so then Hashem gets angry with you. And he brings many, many other indications of the same thing. And so he goes on and he quotes, which is really a matter of some discussion, he quotes the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, who makes a statement that the only time we will find in the Torah the expression charein af, the expression of anger, of divine fury, is going to be specifically in connection with Avodah Zarah. So he said, only find charoinaf with connection to Avodah Zarah. Now the Ramban argues with him, and he says, what are you talking about? He argues with him in the beginning of Sefer Shmais, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu got angry at Moshe Rabbeinu, because Moshe Rabbeinu was resisting the mission to lead the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. So he says, there you have it, Exhibit A, where there is anger, and it's not about Avodah Zarah. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't practicing idol worship. So this is the famous Ramban. Ramban asks on it, and therefore he challenges it. But the Maral sort of defends it, and he says like this: it's not Avodah Zarah specifically. The Rambam isn't contending that it's only by Avodah Zarah, but it's by Avodah Zarah and things like Avodah Zarah. And here, I'll tell you what the Maral says. It's a little bit hard to understand sometimes these kinds of things. Why specifically these as opposed to others? I'll tell you over what he says. And he says like this. He says, first let's get the principle. And then you'll see how he extends it to these other instances where you find the anger of Hashem also leveled in a context which doesn't seem to be Avodah Zarah. And he says like this. Avodah Zarah is a fundamental challenge, so to speak, to Hashem. Why? Because what you're doing is you are giving power, you are granting credibility of power to something other than Hashem Yisparach. And that is a direct challenge to the essence of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. And because it's a direct challenge to the essence of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, so the response which it gets is what the Torah calls Charoin Af. Right, when you challenge something to its essence, right? A person, so to speak, lahavdil alfalfa adol, a person prides themselves more than anything else on the fact that a chveis, you know, that they keep their lawn well, and somebody comes by and they say, ah, boy, look, a weed garden, right? This fellow has over here. He's going to get furious. Right, because he sees that as being his essence. On the other hand, you know, if a fellow never pays attention to his garden, you know, and just in a chveis, whatever, he has somebody comes and mows it and does it once in a while, and somebody comes along and says, oh boy, a weed garden, so, you know, he may not be happy with him, but infuriated, he would not be. Infuriation is when it's, you know, hitting on your essence of what you are, and the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kol Yochel, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the all-powerful. And therefore, when you have something like Avodah Zarah, which is attributing power to something else, that's what brings the Karoin Af. And he brings the notion of the idea that it's called a Tzara. The Avodah Zarah was called a Tzara. And you know, we know in Hebrew when we speak about a Tzara, so the general term Tzara means a terrible difficulty, a terrible situation. But there's also a specific use of the term Tzara, which is a second wife. If a person's married to two people at the same time, so they are called Tzaras to each other. You can imagine why, right? But the idea is because they are competing for the very, very same position. I'm his wife. No, I'm his wife. Okay, so that's the idea. V'amaseicha Tzara ki hizkaneis is a pasuk that the Gemara Darshan is referring to Avodah Zarah. So that brings it. That's the Avodah Zarah of Charoin Af. So he says, okay, that's the essence, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more as we go along, that this is the fundamental issue, the challenge of Avodah Zarah, to the unique and special position of Hashem. And he goes on and he says, so where are the other instances where we find Hashem getting angry? So he says, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe, do something, and Moshe Rabbeinu is directly challenging him, right? It's a direct challenge. This is a conversation which is happening between Hashem and Moshe. So that's a Charoin Af, where there's a direct resistance in that way, a direct hisnagdus to Hashem. And likewise, the pasuk says that v'chor api v'arakti eschem, right? When it says where people would be ma'aneh, would afflict the widow and the orphan, so Hashem tries to convey and say, your mom is hitting me directly, you know, because I associate myself so much with the Yosem and the Almona, with the widow and the orphan, that I take care of them so directly that I view an attack on them to be like it's a direct attack on me. So you would say, you know, okay, so he's afflicting this person, so Hashem might not be so happy with him. But fury! So the Pasuk says Hashem gets infuriated because, again, it's not Avodah Zarah by any stretch of the imagination, but Hashem is saying, I'm going to consider it like a direct hit. And that's the kind of approach which he says, huh?
He challenged Ben Shalom by the Chet Egel and Chet Meraglim. He went head-to-head, Kaviyachol.
Yeah, but as we, in fact, talked about a little bit at the end last week, there he was. Hashem said he was inviting the resistance. He was inviting the resistance more so, it seems, than when it reached that threshold over here by the original Shlichus. Okay. So, again, a challenge to the essence brings out Charoin Af.
The difference between Charon and Evra?
There is a difference. It's beyond our discussion right now to talk about what the difference is. You know, Evra, Vazam, right? There are many, many different terms which are used for anger.
When
Vatanon
uses the term Evra,
that... Right. I don't think he claims it by every kind of anger. It requires, once it's broadened like this, it requires an explanation, because then you have to figure out why in each time, what is it? And I'll make some distinctions, but I don't know that we have to focus for the purposes of our discussion today so much on where else it says it, but on what certainly everybody seems to agree is the most primary occurrence of Charonaf, which is Avodah Zarah, which is of course what this Gemara is about. When the Gemara is saying, what is the time, we say there's an instant when Hashem demonstrates anger, what is that instance? When does Hashem show that anger? He shows that anger when the kings get up, they put their crowns on their heads, and they bow down to the sun, which is Avodah Zarah, Avodah Zarah at its finest, or at its whatever. So therefore, that is what brings the anger of Hashem. So what's the issue over here? What's the specific example? The kings that get up and they put their crowns on their heads and they bow down to the sun. So let's read a little bit more of the Maharal. The Kasha Atam is Bainan Bailam Azeh, Hu Elam HaTeva. When you look at this world, it's the world of nature. It's a world which has its own natural systems. Hashem created in the 6 days of creation a whole natural order of things that flows by itself, Elam Kimin Hagay Naig, a world that follows its own rules. And everything is layer upon layer upon layer. What's the top layer? What's the top layer? Well, man, yes, within the things that are on the face of this earth. But man himself is subject to, we view everything as being tachas ha shemesh, under the sun. When Shlomo HaMelech spoke about this world, the world that we know, constantly, ain kol charash tachas ha shemesh, there's nothing new under the sun. The constant references are to under the sun, this world as it exists, the world of nature that is under the sun. And so we say it because we say that the sun, as the world turns, we speak about how all these different sun, moon, and stars, and all of these things that they go, and they really define the way our life is. Now, you and I might say, oh, come on, we are enlightened people, and therefore we say it doesn't really define the way our life is, except in a certain sense, right, on any level it does, right? We happen to be a little bit cold in this room right now, right? If we go out of this room, dressed the way we are, we're going to be a lot cold. That's a difference in your life, right? The whole seasons of the year and the planting and everything else, it's all based on the orbit of the sun, the orbit of the sun relative to your part of the globe. And in truth, it's also going to be the sun in juxtaposition to all of the other pieces that are there functioning in the solar system. Some of the issues we have identified, some of the issues we have not yet been able to identify scientifically, but we understand and we see it in the very beginning of the Torah, where the Torah on the fourth day of creation, Hashem created the sun and the moon and the stars, and it's v'lim shol v'yom v'alayla. They are called the rulers, they rule day and night, and so on and so forth. The seasons, everything, in a certain sense, is going to be defined by them. Now, yes, you'll have those who will follow the horoscopes, and they'll say, well, it's more than just the weather, it's more than just the produce, it's more than just, you know, those kinds of things of the seasons. And there are even indications in the Gemara of some value, potential possible value to that. So that takes it to the next level. But the general conception, when we speak about ourselves being subject to nature, and being able, I mean, nature is everywhere. Everything poses nature. So if a person, so to speak, wanted to worship the powers that we know, the powers of nature, right, you can worship really anything. But the one which would be seen as the most dominant, the most supreme, the one that defines your day and night and your season, everything else, was the worship of the sun, and with it the sun and the moon and the stars. And the Pasuk uses it as the example, you know, I didn't give you the sun and the moon and the stars like I gave it to all of the other nations of the world. You're supposed to worship me. Okay. So the sun, on the one hand, is called the Melech, right? Bitzva Shamayim. It's called the king in the amongst the heavenly hosts, right? The Maishel. But Hashem is Maishel Al-Kol. Hashem rules over everything beyond that. So he says, the kasher bnei adam einam ovrim es ha'olam hateva l'avodas Hashem k'mo sheroi la'asos. Rachim nishorim b'olam hateva. When people don't think out of the box of the world of nature, when all they see is the natural world that's before them, so the shorthand for referring to them is as the worshippers of the sun, as the worshippers of nature, as the worshippers of science. If they don't look beyond that, if they don't say Su'u Maraim Einechem U'u Mi Bara Eile, go look to the heavens and see who created these things. And the pasuk goes on, who created the sun and the moon and the stars, right? They say, oh, all this happened because of this, right? Big bang. What bang? What banged? Where did what bang came from, right? You know, all these different, the question of going beyond, you can have causative, and you can have all kinds of things that are going to be seen to a certain point, but ask the next question. So says the Maharal, those who are worshipping and subordinating themselves and considering everything that they have to worry about within the box of Bria are, again, the worshippers of the sun. And that's the Avodah Zarah. The matter that we have to go to is to go to the source, to go all the way beyond that, to go and to see up to the Ravina Shalaila. That's right.
Aren't we different than Avodah Zarah? I mean, there are parallels to today, but today it's man-centric, because if we can't measure it, taste it, see it, it doesn't exist. Whereas then, they acknowledged that it had to be from somewhere else, but they thought it was the sun and didn't look beyond.
Well, he is certainly reducing that difference. In other words, yes, there could have been times when the worship of the sun was more of a mystical worship. And today, if we would speak about worshiping of the sun, we would be speaking about a worship to science, to natural systems. And that certainly is a difference between them. The ones who were not so enlightened and not so scientific, they also viewed themselves as being subject to the God. But again, that was the God that they saw. That was the limit. And it has morphed, it has transformed into, in a sense, the worship of science. But again, it's the same thing. This is really as far as I can see. And we speak about this, you know, not about the Parsha, but in the realm of Hanukkah, when we speak about the Greeks who were so enlightened because they had their handle on science, but on the other hand, we say, at the same time, they are the most blind. We speak about the Choshech, right? The remez in the Torah to Yavan is Choshech, right? According to, I mean, there are different Midrashim, but to their kingdom, the Greeks, was the darkness, right? The enlightened Greece is really the darkness, but you know something? When it's light, when the sun is shining, all those stars that are up there, you can't see them. Because what you can see, what is so enlightening, blinds you to what's behind it. Whereas when it's darkness, when you're not going to be so then you're able to see the stars. And to a certain degree, they were blinded by their knowledge. Right? We're not therefore counseling, don't study science so that you won't be blinded by the knowledge of science, but be able to, at the same time, see beyond it.
Rashi, how do you reconcile that with How do you reconcile this idea with Yafifusish or Yafis?
The Olei Shem. In other words, whatever their brilliance and their science and their use, we can take it, but we have to plug it in, and we have to understand that there's something on top of it, and you know there is a divine mover and shaker that makes all of it happen, and so we can write the Torah in Greek. Right? That's the only language in which it has some sanctity, and according to one opinion in the Mishnah, in Megillah, that it's the only place where it has some sanctity, because we're not contradicting the value of science, but we are contradicting science as something which will elbow out the religion, will elbow out the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu above it. And so he says like this, V'haynu d'kamar b'shor sham lochem minichim kisreim b'roshem u'mishtachavim lechama. This is what it means when we say that the kings place the crown on their heads and they bow down to the sun. People are usually subject to the king. The king is above them. And the king will put his crown on his head in his position of authority relative to others, and he will bow down in turn to the sun. If the kings instead do not accept upon themselves Malchus Shamayim, the Ribono Shel Olam's kingdom, the Ribono Shel Olam's control, so then they remain just under the sun, just bowing to the sun, and that's it, and that's what will create ultimately HaKadosh Baruch Hu's anger. Anyone who is part of the stratus or whatever of authority, the various levels anthropomorphism, I think is the word, of authority that exist. So the idea is they have to hand it off. They always have to be, but one second, but there's the Rabban Shem. The king of the Jews had a special mitzvah that he was supposed to be walking around always with a Sefer Torah, because he can present himself as the answer to everybody's questions, as the ultimate ruler, and you can't do that. You always have to show that there's a Rabban Shem above you. So when the king gets up, and he acknowledges whatever is above him, but what he acknowledges is the Shemesh, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu becomes angered, because again, that's a challenge to the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the power that exists in the world. That's the essence, the basis of the Maral's presentation. However, it ain't over yet. And the ain't over yet is because the Maral brings in something which is very, very fundamental here. And a coincidence, which I would even give people a moment to hit on. This time that the Gemara identifies, now especially that we've fleshed it out a little bit, is there anything else significant about this point in time?
Ending with the Kriya Shema.
Oh, excellent. What is the Seif Zman Kriya Shema? What's the last time you're supposed to say Kriya Shema? Last time you're supposed to say Kriya Shema is after 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours of daylight. Why? Because Kriya Shema is supposed to be when you wake up, right? Uvikumecha. So who wakes up the latest? Your teenagers. No, I'm sorry. Who wakes up the latest? The Malachim, the kings. That's what the Gemara says. The kings who, you know, they have other people doing their work for them. So they get up, b'sholei shoyis. They get up at 3 hours. So we understand b'kumecha as being the range from the early risers to the late risers. And by then, what are they supposed to do? That's the time, that's the end of the time to say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. That Hashem is the one and only. Hashem is the power in the universe. That all of the other stuff, all of the nature, all of the things that we see, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the mover and the shaker behind it. So look at that time. That time has these two things. Right? Hashem is waiting there. He's watching the kings. Derech melochim lamei b'sholei shoyis. The time for the kings to get up. Now, king, your Kabbalah so malchus shamayim in a certain sense is the most important, because everything comes to you. I've told you before, I think more than once, how the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer so beautifully describes when Hashem created man, and man was ruling over all of the earth. And he got up, he woke up, and he was so brilliant and so outstanding, and all of the creatures came, and they said, let's bow down to you. They wanted to bow down to him. He's our creator, he's the one. And he says, no, let's all turn and bow down to Hashem Yisbarach. That's what happened on the first Rosh Hashanah, on the first Aleph Tishrei of the world. That's the idea, and that's what we're supposed to do on Rosh Hashanah. Where we go, we say, you know, we're human beings, we're in a certain sense in charge of the world, but we declare that Hashem is our king, that Hashem is above us. So Hashem is especially waiting for Sholei Shoyis, for the kings, the ones who have the most ambiguity about it. You know, somebody who's completely impotent and incapable and doesn't have anything. So for them to turn to Hashem and say, Hashem, help me, you know, that's easy. For the person who has, you know, all the money and good health and everything and so on and so forth, in charge of everything, for him to turn to Hashem and say, Hashem is above me, that's the bigger thing. So Hashem is waiting. That's the Seif Zman Kriya Shema, to declare Hashem Echad. And when it turns out the opposite, and instead they're worshipping the sun, so then it's a drastic story. And it's a negative thing. And this is the idea. That's what brings the anger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what I would like to do now, however, in the time that we have, is to explore two different avenues. One avenue is the avenue of how the Gemara takes it, which is Bilam HaRasha. And Bilam's usage of this moment to, so to speak, stir the anger against HaKadosh Baruch Hu in what he was trying to do. And the other angle I want to take is to have a little bit of a talk about the sun and the moon and the stars, in light especially of the fact of this week's Parsha, which we have, Parshas Vayeshev, which we just started reading yesterday at Mincha, where Yosef had, remember, as his second dream, his dream about the sun and the moon and the stars bowing down to him. So let's start a little bit with Bilam. Bilam says, how can I curse that Hashem didn't curse? How can I have anger when Hashem didn't get angry? That's what it says. He didn't get angry at that point in time. Bilam is an interesting character. And we could, you know, there's a lot to study and to understand about Bilam. But more than anything else, right, Bilam is this kosem, is this so-called, to some degree, it seems that his major power was that, you know, this sorcerer. This sorcerer that was trying to affect these curses and to manipulate the world in his own way. And yes, there are significant discussions beyond the scope of what we're going to talk about here today about Bilam normally versus Bilam here. In other words, here Bilam certainly did have a clear prophecy from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to some degree, a very, very clear prophecy from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara, in fact, says that the only one who had a prophecy that's comparable to the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu was Bilam HaRasha. Right? Everybody else, right? Like, come be Israel, come. There was no prophet like Moshe amongst the Jewish people, but there was amongst the nations of the world. However, as many Rishonim seem to learn, as Ramban seems to learn, Bilam by and large was a kaisim. He was a sorcerer. And if you remember, we talked about sorcery earlier on, I think in the second section of the Be'er HaGaila, in the second Be'er, the second well of the Be'er HaGaila, that the sorcery is this sort of like, you know, this other side. He's trying to work around. He's trying to work around Hashem. And what Bilam's ultimate, right, they work from this other side, these other mystical powers which Hashem might have created that exist in the world. But without dwelling on that, what Bilam comes to is the following conclusion, as expressed in the pasuk which the Gemara describes over here, of Ma'ekav Le'kav Le'kav Ma'ezem Le'zom Hashem, which is that ultimately I can't do anything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want. There are times maybe when Hashem leaves room for me to do things, when Hashem leaves room for me to be able to wreak my havoc. People would come to me and they would say, curse so and so, right? He stole my lawnmower and he didn't give it back. And he would be able to accomplish his thing. Because, okay, Hashem gives room. Hashem leaves room for them to do their own thing. Even in a certain sense, it's machish panaya shamala. It's not following the normal course of nature. Fine, gesunter right, that's exactly it. Hashem's giving room for it. But ultimately, it's only because Hashem gives room for it. And if Hashem doesn't leave room for it, so then there's no possibility of it happening. Now, where would Hashem not leave room for it? So the Gemara says as follows.
Sorry, I'm not going to find you the Gemara.
I don't have it in front of me. I don't remember exactly where it is. But the Gemara makes a drasha and makes an interpretation of this verse where Bilam says as follows. Nachash be Yaakov, v'loy kesem be Yisrael, because there is no nachash, which is nachash is a term for sorcery, in Yaakov, against Yaakov, and there's no kesem, and again that's also another term for sorcery be Yisrael. Okay, so yomer li Yaakov li Yisrael ma poel el. You'll have to say to the Jewish people and to Yisrael what has Hashem wrought, what has Hashem done. However, the Gemara darshens the pasuk. And the darshan's like loy, loy. The word loy with an aleph, and the word loy with a vav. And the Gemara says as follows: Loy nachash b'yakov. You cannot affect the Jewish people by sorcery, but rather kol ha-menachesh loy nachash. The one who can be affected by sorcery is the one who themselves subscribes to sorcery. And this we have in a Gemara in Chulin, which I think we may have discussed in one of the earlier shiurim, where the Gemara says about a certain sage who was worried, or who was being confronted by those who would try to perform sorcery, harmful sorcery against him. And what did he respond? What did he say? And why was he invulnerable to them? Because he said, Ein oid milvadai. Ein oid milvadai. There is nothing other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, Hashem Alekeinu, Hashem Echad. Hashem is the one and only. What Bilam was discovering over here was that to the extent that it is Am Hamiyachadim Shemay, B'chol Yaim, Pamayim B'chol Yaim, right, where we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is gracious to the people who unify His name, who declare Him as the one and only, and they say Shemay Yisrael Hashem Alekeinu, Hashem Echad, what's the day? To the extent that we do that, to the extent that we accomplish that, we are not able to be affected by any of these things. So in a sense, what's happening over here is the following. In the story of Bilam, the anger of Bilam, what Bilam wanted to tap into was, to the extent that indeed people are there and they're worshipping the sun, and Hashem therefore is angry with the world. And when Hashem gets angry with the world, what does He say? Kola menachesh loy nachash. If you want to go that way, fine. I'll give you over to them. That's a principle which we have all over the place. That in Telchu imi b'keri, I will go with you with keri. As the Chavos HaVavos perhaps articulated most clearly. When people will give credence and credibility to the power of things other than Hashem, Hashem says, if you ask for it, you got it. If that's the way you want it to be, so indeed, I will say, I'm going to let them decide. You think, all you can think about is your boss and everything, what he's going to do, is he going to like me, is he going to give me a raise, is he going to give me a raise? If that's all you can think about, and you think that that's going to determine your fate, you know what? I'm going to leave your fate up to the hands of your boss. Gesundheit. That's what the does like the Chavos HaLevavos. To the extent that we are mashlich al Hashem Yaveinu, that we completely give ourselves over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, I'm yours. I'm going to take care of you completely. But to the extent that we pull back, then Hashem says, okay, it's going to be up to them. To the one, right? That's the language of Chavos HaLevavos. I'm not going to try to repeat it, but if me shemeser bitchayinam Hashem, the person who takes away his bitachon from Hashem and puts it to his losoi, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts his fate in the hands of that which he put his trust in. So Bilam here is trying to plug into a vulnerability of the Jewish people. To the extent that the Jewish people are not going to be Hashem Echad people, they're not going to be recognizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To the extent that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees people getting up and worshipping the sun and seeing themselves vulnerable to all other kinds of causes in nature, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu will get angry. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will pull back and be mafkir us and allow us to be subject to all these things. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, however, did a chesed with us at that point in time. And he said, you know, the Jewish people fundamentally are the people who say Hashem Echad. They are fundamentally the people who declare my unity and who are connected only to me. And so I am going to completely, completely stay in the game. And I'm not going to allow them to be vulnerable to Bilam. Even Bilam, who can find the slight cracks in our sense of connection to Hashem, that he can then pry them open, stick his foot in the door, and get. That was Bilam's mastery. Wherever he'll find a little space. That's the great, great, delicious irony of the stupidity, it seems, in spirit of the story of Bilam. Hashem didn't want him to do it. He knew that Hashem didn't want him to do it. Hashem had discouraged him. He had sent all of these things to sidetrack him. But he's still trying to find the way. His whole notion is, but let me find the crack. I'm not trying to do the will of Hashem over here. It's the opposite. I'm trying to do what I can do, where there's going to be room. Leave me a little bit of room. And to the extent that we don't Hashem Echad in the fullest, we are leaving room. HaKadosh Baruch Hu left no room. That was the protection. Maybe it's because we were Hashem Echad at that point in time, and therefore we were like that person in the Gemara, Einad Movada, Einad Movada, Einad Movada. He doesn't see anything as having any power, so he didn't have to worry about the sorcerers, he didn't have to worry about anything. Or maybe it was as the Gemara seemed to present. Maybe we weren't so wholesome in our Hashem Echad, and that's the only power that can affect us. But Hashem was nice to us, because that's basically our theme song. So that's the idea. That's why Bilam is tapping into this moment, because that's the whole idea. Bilam is extra God. He's trying to find the place where Hashem leaves room for other things to function. And so, the moment, the crack of vulnerability is that time when people get up. Kings, the ones who have power, and they bow down to the sun, the power of nature, right? What we would call in the Mishnah, Malchus and oil, derech eretz, the yoke of the king, the yoke of nature, as opposed to Ol Torah, as opposed to the yoke of Hashem. Right. Okay. So that's something, a little bit, about this notion of Bilam. But to extend it a little bit, and then to therefore be able to segue a little bit better into Shavuos, into Vayeshev. So, what did the Gemara say? The Gemara said that Rabbi Shimon Levi had this fellow who was torturing him, bothering him. So he thought he would get him with this trick. He would get him when Hashem was angry. He was a min, after all. He was a heretic. Heretic believes in those other than Hashem. So he wanted to find Hashem's moment of anger when Hashem is angry at that, and he wanted to get him. But he fell asleep. B'hashkocha. Hashem had him fell asleep. Hashem had him fall asleep. He put his head to listen to a tape. He fell asleep and he missed the moment, and he says, ah, evidently it's not derech eretz. Why? So two pshat. One pshat is because v'rachma v'al kol ma'aseh, Hashem has compassion on all his creatures. We're not going to explain that one. Hashem does have compassion on all his creatures. We don't need to explain that one. But the other one is gam onush l'tzadik lo toiv, that for a tzadik to be the cause of a punishment is not a good thing. Right? Remember the Gemara in Brachas, where it brings the same thing. Gemara in Brachas and Dav Zayinam and Aleph. It goes through the same shakla v'tarya. And the same give and take. And the Gemara says, the Gemara discusses this as well with Beruria, right? And Rabbi Meir, where Rabbi Meir wanted, also had this person who was being mitzayer him, and he davened to get rid of him. He says, no, we could daven to make him a tzaddik. I thought it was somewhere over here in the Gemara. But the Gemara speaks about this idea that it's not good for the person to cause the punishment to the tzaddik, to the other person. So what he suggests is as follows. And we talked about it actually this week in the Tefillah Parsha Shir. Yaakov Avinu, in his tefillas to Hashem, he prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that Hashem should save him. He did not pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu ever that Hashem should destroy Esav. In fact, we find the opposite, that when Esav was coming with 400 men, Yaakov Avinu, it says, Vayira Yaakov Ma'od Vayeter Loi. And Rashi says, what does that mean? What's the two terms of fear? Two terms of non-anticipation of what was happening? He was worried maybe he would be killed. And he was worried maybe he would have to kill. Yaakov Avinu didn't want to have to do that. And part of the idea in this, in Anush L'Tzadik L'Toiv, is that when a person prays to Hashem to get rid of that person, what the person is doing is the person, even as he is praying to Hashem, he is giving power, giving credence and credibility and importance to that person as the fate in his life. You know, when it says in the Torah, you're not supposed to take revenge, so the Sefer HaChinuch explains, why don't you take revenge? Because whatever that person did is his problem. What happened to you is not because of him. You believe, if you want to believe completely, that your life is defined by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then don't worry about him. Worry about you. And Yaakov Avinu, when he davened, he worried about himself. Rabbeinu Shalom, you have to save me. I want you to save me. I want to be spared. Esav? What's going to be with Esav? That's not my problem. And Gamonish Litzadik Leitev says the same thing. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, if you want to be okay, and you want to be saved from the difficulties of this person, so pray for yourself that you should be saved. Don't wait there and try to nab him. You know, when you're nabbing him, you're going to nab him at that moment when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is angry about the other powers that exist in the world. Irony of ironies. He's also one of those powers that exists in the world, in your conception of things. You, by trying to curse him and knock him down, that nim, because he believes in other things and he's causing all of these problems, Don't give him the credibility that he can cause you those problems. No way. He has nothing to do with it. Don't try to damage him. Don't try to destroy him. The same way we're not vulnerable to Bilam because of his sorcery, we're not vulnerable to some fellow because of his hakachainikri, because of his sword, because of anything. No person can affect us. Ein od milvade doesn't only apply to magicians. It also applies to bosses, and it also applies to muggers, and it applies to everything. Ein od milvade.
Yeah, but Yaakov prepared for war, and he also bribed them.
Yaakov prepared for war, and he dealt with Esav, and he did everything which he was mishtadel to do in this world, but in his spiritual world, just like a person shouldn't walk into work based on this shiur tomorrow morning and go to his boss and go like this, you know, and say like this, because you don't make any difference to me. Of course, to some degree, there is some hishtadlus in this world that a person does, recognizing, you know, I got to get the clients, so I have to go and I have to do it. But on the other hand, when you're doing that, you're going through the motions necessary, because that's the hishtadlus, that's the necessary effort within this veneer of the world that exists, just like you put on a coat in the wintertime and you make yourself cool in the summertime. Hakol bidei shamayim chutz mitzinim upachim. We say everything's in the hands of heaven except for the heat and the cold. You're supposed to recognize that there are some powers that exist in the world that you have to quote unquote deal with on a hishtaglus level, but emotionally, in the world of your belief system of what it is, it's not. It's a veneer. It's not really, really going to be there. So Yaakov Inu does do the Doron work, does peace, does do the Milchama peace. He does do the pacification, the appeasement. He does do the warfare peace to whatever degree he does. By the way, over there also, it wasn't to destroy Esav. It was just to save himself. He didn't fight. He was going to just figure out how we're going to escape, at least part of us, unscathed. It wasn't aggressive. But whatever. That's but the idea is clarity. A clarity that Ein Od Milvadei in the fullest sense. And part of that clarity is, I'm not going to obsess about destroying him. I'm going to obsess about just what my future is.
Two questions. Number one, is that why at the end of Shemona Esrei, in the meditative paragraph, the reference is to make all of their plans, nullify their plans, and not wipe out us or my enemies?
Presumably, yes. You're going to have to struggle with Vila Malshinim Altisik. Right. So,
Gimel is going to say, we do tell and take Gimel, and right. That's okay, wipe them out.
Right, right.
That's even worse.
Right. And there is a notion, Kelna Kamei Sashem, Kelna Kamei Sefia, which has an aspect which I think we one of the early Shiurim with Talmud Chacham Meikav and Eitek and Nachash, he's also on the second Be'er. Right, where we speak about this idea that there's a notion of a desire for justice, right? A desire for justice. But Rabbi Shimon Levi wasn't having a desire here for justice; he was having a desire to have an easy life himself. And in that, we don't wish that on anybody. To have a desire that the world should reflect Hashem's justice and that the evil should suffer, yes, that is a prayer that can be confused with this. V'la Malshinim, we understand. And by the way, Malshinim was written by, and again, we talked about this, a little bit more of an extensive treatment of this is in last week's Tefillah Shir, but in Shmuel HaKotan, who wrote Malshinim Al Tisikva, who wrote that prayer, which is against those who attack us, these meaning that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was worried about. So what was Shmuel HaKotan's line in Pirkei Avos? It was a quote of a pasuk in Mishlei. Bin Farai Vecha Al Tismach, Uvakasha Al Yagei Libecha, Pen Yir Hashem, V'Rabbe Eina V'Eish Me'al Avapai. When your enemy falls, don't rejoice. When he trips, don't let your heart skip a beat. You know, whatever it is. Don't be so happy. Because if Hashem will see it, it'll be bad in his eyes and he'll turn his anger away from him. Unto you. Right? What's the idea? If you give him too much credit, there you go. You're going to be in his hands. It's not him. Don't be happy about his downfall. You can be happy about your salvation. Great. Happy about that part of Kriyas Yamsuf, that you were able to go through and escape. Don't be happy about the part about the Egyptians sinking in the sea. That's not the big deal. That's not the big deal. The main thing is, remember, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved you. Don't think about the other one. Let's move on to Yosef. And we're going to move on to Yosef in this way, in conclusion, on two fronts. The obvious front is that this very dynamic of Onesh L'Tzadik L'Taif is the essential dynamic of what happened in the story of Yosef and his brothers. Yosef's brothers messed him up royally, didn't they? Not only did they mess him up royally, but they messed up Yaakov Avinu. Because there they went down to Mitzrayim, and they told him about Binyamin, and so on and so forth. And Yaakov says, Lomari Yosef, what did you do to me? Right? Why did you tell him about Binyamin? Now he's going to drive you crazy about Binyamin. Not only did I lose Yosef, I'm also going to lose Binyamin. But Yosef, you know, I mean, talk about, you know, having some resentment against his brothers. And what's the story? What's the emes? What's the truth? Yosef will say, when the brothers finally come to him, when he finally reveals himself to his brother, what's he going to say? You did nothing to me. It was from the Rabbanu Shalaila. It was all from God. It's unbelievable. Right? But he says, you did not affect my life one whit. Nothing. It was all from the Rabbanu Shalaila. And Yaakov Avinu, who was completely beside himself from everything, and seeing how his sons had hurt him so much and so on and so forth by saying this, when he comes down to Yosef and he sees the whole beauty of the picture, that in fact this was not, as the Medrash says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu rebuked Yaakov Avinu, you never said anything bad now, but look what you said, why did you cause me harm? I'm going busy planting the seeds of your salvation in Egypt, and you're saying, why are you doing me harm? And when Yaakov Avinu came down to Mitzrayim, and he saw Yosef, and he realized that indeed that's what it was, what did he do? Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Right? Yosef was kissing him, Yaakov wasn't responding. Why? Because he was being Kairei Es Shema. I mean, you have to see the significance of Kriya Shema as it fits in there. It is also when Yaakov Avinu was worried that he didn't have the Shechina, when he had all of the brothers surrounding him at the end of his days, and the only way they could refer to him that they were all whole together. The Kal Yisrael was whole was by saying Shema. In other words, if you say Hashem Echad, then those terrible divisions that existed between us before can evaporate. Because the terrible divisions which exist because I think that you are messing me up. My jealousy to you is because if you didn't have that job, I had have that job. If you didn't have that money, I'd have that money. If you didn't have that position, I'd have that position. And that's what creates kina. And when we recognize Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, there it goes out the window. That's what it says in Sfarim. The first one of the Aseres Hadibros is, I am Hashem your God, the one and only. The last one of the Aseres Hadibros is Loi Sachmai. Don't want what somebody else has. Why? Because that's it. You start with this great religious belief in Hashem, and what does it end up with? That your relations with another human being are not going to be stressed. Our stresses between each other is because of kina, v'tachrus. This idea that we get in each other's way. When we understand that each person has his own place, then we ask a shalom aleinu. Right? That's what the other Zohar says. We don't have time to get into the details, but you understand the concept that Yosef was the ultimate gamona shel tzadik lo tov. His realization was the ultimate in that. And so it was the time for Hashem Echad, Hashem Echad, Hashem Echad, and to bring back together the togetherness of the Jewish people that way. Which, by the way, of course, was the important part of which went against Bilam HaRasha. Because what did Bilam try to do? Efes katseyu tira v'kula leitira. Bilam kept going and trying to see part of the Jewish people. Part, part, part. He went to vantage points where he could see them. V'kula leitira. And in the Rishonim it says that the idea was because he knew he would not be able to destroy the totality of the Jewish people. He wanted to pick on little pieces. But when the pieces are attached to each other, echad, mikam chisog echad ba'aretz, then you can't hit them. And what makes the pieces attached to each other? Emunah. Belief that everything is going to be dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? That's the thing.
So like the Jews coming out of Mitzrayim and Amalek attacking the stragglers who were behind the
Those who are not going to be part of the thing. And that's, you know, the Goyen says that the Gemara in Yuma, where it speaks about the, it said so recently in the Yuma Shir, the Goyen says that the Gemara says the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of the three major sins, the cardinal sins, Aveiros Zarah, Shefichas Dam, Aveiros Zarah. The second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed by Simas Chinam. But the first Beis HaMikdash, they had confidence. Why? Because they had Bitachin. So he says that's the idea. They didn't have Sinas Chinam because they had Bitachin. They trusted in Hashem, so they didn't hate each other. When you don't trust in Hashem, you hate each other because you think each person gets in each other's way. Okay. Ein kan mokam laharich. It's a very, very important concept, a very important piece of this. But what's the other part with Yosef? Yosef HaTzadik has two dreams. First dream is 11 sheaves of wheat come down and bow down to his. The second dream was the sun and the moon and the stars come down and come and bow down to him. So the Ramban says that the reason why he had a dream about sheaves of wheat and the 11 sheaves of wheat coming and bowing down to him was because that was what was going to happen. What was going to happen was that they were going to need wheat. Right? They were going to need food. And because they needed food, they had to come down to Mitzrayim, and the 11 brothers would come down and they would bow down to Yosef and Mitzrayim. Right? Exactly fitting the dream, the content of the dream, the specific content of the dream was fitting to the way things would unfold. And Ramban also speaks about the fact that, again, and Rashi, you know, but the second dream was that not only would the 11 brothers come down, right? Ramban says the reason why Yosef did this whole masquerade was so that first the Binyamin would come down and he'd have all 11 brothers bowing down to him, and then he would reveal himself and Yaakov would come down, and then he would have the sun and the moon and the stars. So it would be two separate stages. So one thing the Ramban doesn't explain, and that is, we might understand the specific significance of the sheaves, but we don't understand the specific significance of the sun and the moon and the stars. What is the meaning of that? So I want to tell you a pshat, and I think that it's true. The sun and the moon and the stars, as we've learned today here in the Maral, is as the world turns, is teva, is this is the way things are happening and unfolding. And when Yosef ultimately revealed himself, after the 11 brothers came and bowed down to him for the purely non-inspiring, non-revelatory need, we need food, and the only way he's going to give us food is if we come and we bow down to him, all 11 of us. Right, that was dream number one. But when Yosef revealed himself after that, what was Yosef revealing to the brothers? He wasn't just revealing to them his identity. He was revealing to them Hashem's identity. He was revealing to them that you don't understand. You thought about what you did to your brother. This has been part of this magnificent master plan. This is not a world which is under the sun and the moon and the stars and things happening. You know, this is all Bamish Hashkocha Pratis. This is the divine providence pulling the strings and making things happen. It's not just an intrigue, a family feud, or whatever else you're going to see it as being. That's the sun and the moon and the stars. Who are the sun and the moon and the stars? The sun and the moon and the stars are Yaakov and his wife and the Shvatim. In other words, our fate is really what's making the world turn. The famine? El Nino? No. Yaakov and the Shvatim. Right? The sale? The brothers? No. Yaakov and the Shvatim. The greatest force which is present over here is them. And that's Klal Yisrael being compared to the stars. What does it mean when HaKadosh Baruch Hu compares the Jewish people and says, Avram, he says, Avram, look down to the stars and you'll see them. Those are your children. What did Hashem do then first? He said, Vayotze Oso HaChutza. He took him out. Says the Gemara, what does it mean he took him out? He says, look, everybody else in the world, you know, I just let the world turn and let them happen whatever happens. But you, I'm pulling you out of there. And you are not subject to the sun and the moon and the stars. You're above it. You have special divine providence. those stars, so to speak, that you see down there that make the world turn, those are your children, those are your family. What does that mean? That everything that's going to happen to affect your world is not going to be because of the rotations, the stars, just the normal things, but it's going to be because of your positioning, because of what is supposed to happen to you. And if you want to know why the world is turning the way it's turning because of the B'nai Yisrael. They become the stars. That's what was to be revealed to the brothers of Yosef, when ultimately Yosef says, I'm Yosef. Do you realize what this means, that I'm Yosef? Do you realize that I'm here to sustain you? Do you realize that therefore everything that you perceived about what happened until this point is completely, completely off basis? You're thinking it's one way and it's a whole different story. Do you realize what this means for us? You realize what this means, that all this is happening because of us? Because we are the Shemesh Yireach HaKoychavim. That's what it means. That's the notion. When people instead bow down to the sun and the moon and the stars, ay, ay, ay. When they think that it's that, it's impossible. They want to bow down to Yisrael, Yishtachvu l'chal l'umim, they'd be closer to the truth. So these are the things which come together. The understanding of what makes things happen. Hashem Echad. And at the same time, therefore, the inability of one person to affect another negatively, which leads, of course, to Yisrael Goyachat, to the unification of the Jewish people, because we realize we're all just dependent on Hashem, and we're not going to affect negatively each other. That's the idea. So with the third hour of the day, Malchus, recognize Malchus Shemayim. So then that's what stems Hashem's anger. Okay.
So why made the bow down to Yosef? Just because he was the only teaching him?